Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a director of Generations with Vision, also the host of this program that's been airing on this station and on the internet for 9 to 7, 8 years at this point. Dave Buhner also in studio with me, and a couple of dads. Fathers of five, that makes 10 for us. You take over the world your way. We'll take over the world ours, as we like to say from time to time. But friends, today we want to talk about the social trends that surround us. Now, we're raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado in a homeschool environment, and some people accuse us of separating our children from the systems. How are they going to be little missionaries at 7, 8 years of age and instruct all the other kids in the school not to have illegitimate sex and use condoms? How is my 7 and 8 year old kid going to be able to do that in the public schools if you shelter them in your homes? Well, we want to answer that question today on this edition of the Generations broadcast. And Dave, I want to tie in the 2011 Family Research Council report. Marriage and Religion Institute does an annual report on the status of the family in America. And I tell you what, it's an excellent report available at the Marriage and Religion Institute, part of the Family Research Council. Well, there's some incredible changes that have occurred. The number one most important change that we have been mentioning again and again and again, the most important social change in America since 1960 is the number of children born without fathers in single-parent households. Number one, most important, the most shocking statistic you will see in the Family Research Report from 2011 is, again, once again, the number or percentage of kids born without fathers, 41%. Up from 6% in 1960. Okay, so you've heard that on this broadcast a bunch of times because it is socially defining for our entire system. Now, the reason we go over these things is because the culture around us always affects us. If you send your kids into these schools, if you send your children into supermarkets, if they watch motion pictures, if you have any contact with the society out there on the macro, that macro will affect your children and your grandchildren to some extent. It's just the way it works when you raise your children in a society like ours that has a great deal of homogeneity in terms of its culture and the way its culture works its way into every nook and cranny of our systems. Dave, I took a trip up into North Dakota a number of years ago, was shocked as we traveled through these teeny weeny little towns. There were gas stations, there was a little mini mart, and there was a tattoo parlor. That's right, in every single, or just practically every single little town, rinky-dink little town in the eastern, western plains of the Dakotas, you're finding the same kind of culture you find in the inner cities of Denver. Dave, it's because effectively media have made it through all of these systems into all of these schools through HBO, through MTV, through all these other cultural mediums. And Dave, you know that everybody can get their DirecTV dish. Everybody can get their 147 channels. It doesn't matter where you live. You can get a homogeneous culture, and your children will have access to other children and be part of those social groups and turn out much like them. That's just the way it works in our homogeneous culture.
So even if you live in Podunk, South Dakota, your children could watch MTV just like the children do in Manhattan, New York. And now, one of the reasons, of course, there's tattoo parlors in all those towns of South Dakota is that there's a big tourist business of people going into Sturgis, South Dakota, and getting themselves tattoos and living drunk and fornicating and doing what they do at Sturgis. So they want to be part of that and get the little piece of the nickel. But by and large, you cannot go more than 5 miles from any high school in this country without encountering a tattoo parlor.
And there might be a difference between inner city Denver and Chicago and Nowhereville, South Dakota. There may be some differences, but the homogeneity of the culture is going to be evident, I think, because of the social mediums. And they've not just HBO and MTV anymore. The internet, of course, brings us into access to all these sorts of things. We'll discuss that a little later in the broadcast. But as we get back to the FRC report from 2011, the average household size is another important change, very important change. This basically went into free fall from 1960 to the present age, dropped from 3.33 to 2.57. Now, that's really significant, because, Dave, of course, we live in the loneliest time in all of human history. And if you look at the chart, the average household size chart, from the FRC report, you're going to see a free fall. Almost no respite whatsoever from 3.33 as the average household size in 1960, all the way down to 2010, 2.57, meaning that we live in the loneliest time again in all of human history. I've talked about this a number of times. People live alone. Far more people live alone today than any other time. Why? Because postmodern man is lonely. He just wants to live alone. He is without relationship, and when he does live with people, he texts his wife. He emails his daughter. He's hardly in contact anymore. His brain is in a jar, and the others in the household are the same way. Friends, we don't live in a relational time at all. This is a very important statistic, and effectively, I think, describes the day in which we live. The marriage rate has been in free fall since 1970, almost no respite at all. From 11.0 to 7.3, far less people are married than before, and as we mentioned, the nuclear family now makes up less than half of American households. The average marriage age is another thing that's been nonstop on the rise since 1950. Not 1960, 1950. Since 1950, the average marriage age for the average male has gone from 22.0 all the way up to 28. And Dave, I know that's gonna continue to rise. There's no question in my mind that's gonna be 30, 31 by the time we hit 2018.
I don't think so either, Kevin. You look at it, you look at the big picture, just
these guys aren't growing up, and these guys aren't growing up. The average 30-year-old kid is not grown up. 70% of them not grown up by 30 years of age, friends, up from 30% in 1970. That was the Newsweek article we read about a couple of years ago.
You got two things happening simultaneously. Coincidentally, you have a lack of job opportunities because of some government policies and some economic realities that are driving children back to home. But you also have this lack of maturity. Children are told not to grow up. They're taught not to grow up. Kevin, when I was when I was 15 years old, I had a job. I was working 20 hours a week for Arby's down the street. You know, you can't even have that job now that I was doing until you're 18 years old. It's not legal. So you have on the one hand policy keeping children immature. On the other hand, you have children not maturing because their whole lives are scheduled around playtime.
Friends, these are incredibly powerful trends that are moving like a freight train in your direction, and it's very difficult, extremely difficult, to oppose these massive social trends that are changing the way your family will look in the year 2018 or the year 2028, unless you get a vision for something different. Which is why we bring this broadcast to you each and every day on the Generations Radio program. We want to talk about something else before we end the program today, and we're going to deal with it in just a moment. Teen sex. Some issues there, some developments I think you need to hear about. Teen sex next on Generations. Maybe you've heard of home education. For the last 25 years, families have been bringing education home as they integrated education back into the family. Now this is spawning a new movement, and it's called family-based economics. Could this movement salvage the family? Could it save an economy or produce a sustainable agriculture? You know, when the debt-based economic systems fail, when the family fails, when the non-sustainable agricultural systems fail, what are you going to do? It's time to get a vision for biblical family-based economics now. The wise man builds his systems on the rock. Now the foolish men didn't, and now look at what's happening. We're taking the 2011 Family Economics Conference to North Carolina on March 11th and 12th, 2011. Invited speakers include Doug Phillips from Vision Forum, Eric Weir from Weir Capital Investments, Scott Brown, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. We're talking about how you will prepare your children for the future without brick-and-mortar colleges. We're talking about mentorships, contractualization, networking into the changing economies, family dynamics in the integrated economy, family inheritance, bootstrapping entrepreneurism, sustainable family economic systems, and family health care options that avoid socialist medical systems. Folks, almost every developed nation today reports social and economic decline on the macro scale. But we believe that our families can thrive in the midst of it all. We can build gardens in the ashes. For more information, you need to check out conference2011.com now. That's conference2011.com. Back back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today, reviewing the Family Research Council report. Marriage and Religion Institute has put together a report on an annual basis on the status of the family in America. And one of the more interesting developments that comes through these charts, and by the way, there are some 200 pages of charts, so if you go there, you're going to have to wade through a lot of data before you get to some of the things that we summarized on this edition of Generations. You're also going to find that teen sex has virtually flatlined since 1990. Something very interesting. It has actually decreased in some categories by 2, 3, 4%. And it could be that teens aren't as honest as they used to be, or less honest. It's hard to say, Dave, that this data actually reflects the true blue representation of what's going on. But nevertheless, Dave, I think we're seeing a change in sexual behavior among young people. And I'm not saying it's all good. In fact, we're going to give you a statistic in just a moment that indicates that things are actually getting a little worse in some of these areas.
Okay, but I think, you know, there's two kinds of lies. There's regular lies and there's statistics. And statistics can be meant to say just about anything you want. And I think the statistic is saying that the number of children fornicating has flatlined.
Virtually,
but,
right.
But not the number of fornications.
Well, and the problem, of course, is the kind of fornication going on has changed. So certainly that, I think, is a clear data point to most of us. It turns out that according to MSNBC, it doesn't mean that every form of sexuality is on the decrease. In fact, there are some forms of sexuality, some forms of fornication that are even more egregious and practiced more often among our young people. And folks, if you want to know how we interpret ethics, we do it from a biblical perspective. The Bible, God, is the source of ethics. We don't look for our society. We don't look for a changing, evolving standard of justice and ethics. No, we look for an absolute standard that is revealed to us by God. Otherwise, you have no authority whatsoever to speak concerning any ethical issue whatsoever. So we stand on a biblical perspective in terms of ethics, and the Bible determines where sin lies and where those sins are more egregious. And one of the most egregious sins in the Bible, placed as a death penalty sin or crime by biblical law, is the sin of homosexuality. And no question, no ifs, ands, or buts about that. When it comes to biblical ethics, that is a death penalty crime. I mean, that's a serious, serious crime. Now, there are some crimes more egregious than others as defined by scriptural biblical revelation. This one's a big one, happens to be a really big one. And when social systems go into decline, you tend to see a breakdown of sexuality, a burnout of sexuality, and a massive increase in homosexuality for a period of time. Well, here's a story from MSNBC that speaks of the massive increase in teen sexuality in the area of homosexuality. Nearly 1 in 10 teens sexually active has had a same-sex partner, double what previous research had shown. According to a surprising new study from Pediatrics Magazine, revealed 9.3% of teens say they have one partner at least with the same sex, et cetera, which is kind of gross, Dave, to read these sorts of things. I mean, you hate to bring these sort of stories to light. It's difficult to reveal the unfruitful works of darkness. We need to rebuke them. We need to stand up and say these things are wrong. It's too bad this is happening. It's a burnout in society. It's an egregious thing in the sight of God. I mean, these are very, very negative things to talk about. But the number 9.3% is about twice that of the 2002 study of teens that showed 5 to 6% of teens having sex with same-sex partners. I don't know that it means there's an increase in prevalence, as Massachusetts psychologists, Dr. Daniel Carlott, AOL Health's mental health expert, as homosexuality has become more and more accepted in society, people are more willing to acknowledge. New research analyzed data from 17,220 teenagers, 42% of whom said they were sexually active. Clearly, there's a high rate of same-sex partners among teens, and we need to recognize any vulnerabilities that may be associated with these behaviors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was a number one song that got teens and tweens talking about this stuff as something that was acceptable. Said Dr. Carlott to AOL Health, "I don't see this as being dangerous, though." He's referring to Katy Perry's hit song, "I Kissed a Girl," as a watershed moment, quote-unquote. Very interesting stuff, friends. Of course, I've referred to that a number of times in this program, and I've gone across the country warning parents about this very virulently rebellious, anti-God song that stands up against biblical ethics in a very, very egregious sort of way, and encourages little teeny boppin' 13, 14-year-old girls to engage in lesbian activity. That's the Katy Perry song. And, Dave, it's interesting that they draw that in. Again, friends, this culture, the culture that is constructed for us by Nashville and HBO and MTV has been extremely, extremely dangerous to an entire culture on the macro level. If your kids attend a school, Dave, I was at a homeschooling conference in Grand Junction, Colorado 2 years ago when Katy Perry's song came out. I happened to mention it. This father came up to me and said, my son has heard of that, and it's been going through his mind off and on because he was hanging out with kids in the neighborhood. He has some friends in the youth groups or what have you that had access to the macro culture, and it was affecting this young boy as well. And he says it's a terrible, terrible song, and it's really affected a lot of the culture. This was, 2 years ago. Dave, I don't think we should underestimate the power of a pop culture and what it's doing to our youth.
Well, of course we can't underestimate the power. The power is huge. It is a wave. It's a tsunami that comes at our children. It is the exploitation of children. Now, when I was young, fornication songs dominated the radio. Now, it's the 60s and the 70s, and whether it was Why Don't We Go Do It in the Road by the Beatles or the Chevy Van song or on and on, fornication was the theme. So we saw a huge rise in active fornication amongst teens because it was now cool, and then it was expected. I remember A.C. Green, he was a basketball player, Kevin, I don't know if you knew about this, with the Los Angeles Lakers and then some other teams. Now, he's a professional basketball star,
yeah,
a big-time athlete, and he was running around going to schools talking about abstinence, as he himself was a virgin, saying that was the way to live life, and he was mocked, incessantly mocked from those who were in the schools and those who were in the NBA.
And you stand up against homosexuality today in these high schools, these colleges, you know you're going to be mocked.
Of course you are.
Going to bring all kinds of weird accusations about you as being homophobic or what have you.
Kevin, what's surprising about these numbers is that it's only as bad as it is.
Yeah.
Because this tsunami has been a multi-billion dollar campaign aimed right at our children,
yeah,
usually under the nose of the parents.
10%, friends. 10% of teens in these high schools. That's a lot. It's 1 in 10. That means that these homosexual clubs are going to be everywhere. That means that homoerotic stuff is going to come out of those art classes. It means that these kids are going to be indoctrinated in this kind of thing, and it's only going to grow. Remember, friends, what's happening right now. Teen sex is pretty much flatlined. Why? Because of sexual burnout. And sexual burnout comes when they're experimenting with things that tend to burn out these people sexually and burn out societies, which is what we read in Romans chapter 1, by the way, when Paul refers to homosexuality there towards the end of the chapter. This is what's going on, friends, right now. People are burned out on sexuality, and this is one reason why I think these kids aren't participating in some of it, because it's in front of them so much, and they're having to deal with sexually charged advertisements, sexually charged magazines, sexually charged girls that are half-dressed in front of them all the time. You've got the internet that's sexually charged. Every time you go to MSNBC or Fox News or what have you and you scroll down a little bit, you're going to have sex everywhere. Sex just attacks us from every single angle. At one time, sex was happening in the marriage bed. At one time, it was in a protected environment in which wonderful things happened and they were blessed by God and they were fruitful and men could have healthy sex lives for 30, 40, 50 years of their lives. Not anymore. Now it's everywhere. And it's burning people out. Dave, I think we've got to be careful with our youth. We've got to be careful we're not talking about this too much. And granted, we have been bringing some of this stuff out from time to time. Hopefully, we're doing it in a careful sort of way. But we got to be careful we're not putting this stuff in front of our children constantly. Now, we've got to point out that this is what's going on because every time you go to Safeway, every time you go on the internet, every time you watch Fox News, every time you watch a commercial during the Super Bowl or what have you, you're going to see this stuff. We need to point out to our children what it is and what it's doing to us. I think we just got to be honest. This stuff is burning us out sexually.
Well, Kevin, there's two problems. One is that we never discuss it and pretend that sex isn't part of human existence. If we do that, we're not going to have marriages, we're not going to have children, we're not going to have a full life that Christ promised.
And the Bible talks about it some.
Yeah,
well,
we have a whole book in the Bible that presents it in a poetic poem, in a beautiful sense. The other thing we can do is never stop talking about it and destroy what God has designed to be beautiful by putting in a counterfeit.
Yeah.
And the counterfeit is destruction. Now, what God says was shameful has become mainstream. In other words, people are not keeping it in the marriage bed behind closed doors. It's not the union of a man and a woman becoming one. It has become pure friction and recreation and just
and dragged out for everybody to see. Friends, that's why modesty is important in our language. Let's be careful how we talk about these sorts of things. I like to talk about intimacy. I like to use the word intimacy because it kind of stands back just a little bit. It's language that's more modest in how we handle it. When with intimacy within the marriage relationship, that can apply to a lot of different things. It can be a peck on a cheek. It can be a lot of different things. So we step back. We don't just jump in and get really blunt about it and be immodest in our language, just like we ought to be careful not to be immodest in our dress. And when you've got brothers and sisters in the church that are letting it all hang out, at least girls, maybe boys don't do it as much, but they're just letting it all hang out for everybody to enjoy, everybody to see. Suddenly, what's happening but an environment for lust, and you've got the same problem. You're not seeing your ladies holding things back and hiding things and keeping themselves pure and saving themselves for the real context in which the intimacy ought to be manifesting itself. And Dave, I've talked about intimacy as holding a glass or a gas bubble, you know, like, or a little bubble that your children blow. You know, if you grab one of these bubbles, these soap bubbles, if you just grab it and manhandle it, and after a while it just disappears and you've ruined the beautiful bubble, soap bubble that your daughter presented for you. You know, if you just grab the thing, that's the way it is when we talk about sexuality. We grab it, we manhandle it, we've ruined it. We've got to be really careful how we handle these sorts of things. Another reason why I think, Dave, the teen sex thing is flatlining is because I think these kids are just burned out on a fictitious ideal. They've been there. They've done that. They got the T-shirt. It's no big deal. It's no longer a taboo like it once was. Remember that men want to do things that are taboo. I mean, that's the sinful heart. That's what sinful men like to do. And when something isn't taboo anymore, you know, as in fornication isn't taboo, everybody does it, it's a big deal. It's not quite as exciting as it used to be. And I think that's the way a lot of these young people are looking at this.
I think you're right. There's always this desire to give God a little bit more defiance, a little bit more defiance. You didn't strike me dead in the last one. Or to rebel against our parents. It used to be if you had a cigarette behind the school, that was really rebellious. Now it's just taking more and more outrageous activity.
Now it's doing the Katy Perry thing in the hallways at Douglas County High School. And
or
by the way,
recycling.
We have reports of that sort. Or not recycling, right?
Yeah. which, you know, if you're going to choose one, I'd say... Yeah. Don't recycle.
That would be, yeah, probably a little more inappropriate to the laws of God, perhaps. But here's the other thing. Now, here's another reason why we're seeing what we're seeing. Dave, virtual relationships now way more prevalent than real relationships. And that's something you mentioned off air, and I think it's really critical in these discussions. Why are children not interrelating with each other? Why are there fewer boyfriends and girlfriends? Why are there fewer boys at 28, 9, 20, 30, 31 years of age getting married to ladies? Because they're not having relationships with them. Why? Because they have virtual relationships. Because there's so much more access to online porn today than there was in 1990. I mean, that's a big difference. You got to admit, Dave, there's more online today than in 1990. I mean, it's like, okay, hundreds of millions of people online? In 1990, there weren't that many people online. Moreover, there are tens of millions of pornographic sites out there accessible to these young men. And more than one-third of 16- and 17-year-old boys surveyed said they had intentionally visited X-rated sites in the past year. That's more than one-third. The results come from a 1,500 Internet user survey, and these were young 10- to 17-year-olds. And that, by the way, was up from 25% in 1999. So over about 8-9 years there, you saw a pretty important increase in the access that young people have to online porn, and which means also that you have way more young men effectively diffused into online relationships, online addictions, etc., and far fewer young men out there interacting with real human beings. I mean, we're talking about real girls and real boys getting to know each other in real human relationships. Hey, that may be even more problematic than anything else we've talked about today. I mean, this is big. This is important.
This is big. Now, the men can live a little fantasy life and have some kind of release that way. But there's another part, and this is the whole Facebook culture, where they have virtual friends. You know, if you're just writing little typing little messages to one another, you don't have to deal with the real things of life.
Yeah, I mean, what a pain having to deal with real people. It's a lot less risky to go online and just...
My avatar never has bad breath.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
you never offend them. You never get into squabbles. And you know how girls are. I mean, before you know it, they're emotional basket cases, and then you've got to deal with that. And what a hassle.
But it's so easy. You just press that little button, and you defriend them, and you've made your point.
Yeah.
I think you have that social interaction. You have the pornography thing, to be sure, and the texting. The relationships have gotten more and more virtual, in both the emotional sense and in the physical sense. And I'm afraid that men and women have lost the capacity to relate to each other in anything other than a superficial way. In other words, spiritual communication is not even possible amongst most of these teens.
Dave, I think there are some signs of hope. And let me just end the program on that. We just have a minute or two left. And friends, as we talk about these things, yes, we're in a sexually burned out era, but I think it's a moment for great opportunity. And it's interesting, Dave, that in the motion picture industry, I think you're starting to see some good stuff happening. Certainly with the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival. You've got some good culture coming out of that. You see decentralization of media going on right now. Hollywood, I think, is starting to produce some maybe halfway decent movies. Certainly in the 1980s, Dave, I think you had a lot of sexually charged stuff. And I'm not sure every movie is as sexually charged today as it was in the 1980s and 1990s.
I think so.
There's been some changes there. There certainly are some extremely ugly things happening in Hollywood. No question in my mind about that. But the wider culture is saying, forget about the macro. We want to see some micros that are producing some healthy, nurturing culture for our families. We're certainly seeing it in San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival, and that, my friends, is a good sign. Moreover, friends, let me say that there are people everywhere turning back to the Book of Proverbs. You know, how do we train our children in these things? We said, number one, you don't talk about it all the time. Don't put it in front of your children constantly, but the Book of Proverbs does deal with the issue of sexuality. No question about it. There's some great lessons through the Book of Proverbs. That's why I put together our family Bible study guides for the Book of Proverbs. Because here we're warned about the Proverbs 7 woman, the Proverbs 5 woman, but we also are encouraged to delight in the wife of our youth. And we've got these study guides now available at kevinswanson.com. And Dave, as you know, the Volume 2 has come out. Hooray, hooray, hooray. We're excited about the new product. We've got some, 450 pages of great stuff, friends. This is what you do to give your children a well-balanced approach to sexuality and every other area of life. Give them the Book of Proverbs. It's God's wisdom. It's got to be right. There's a lot of mistakes being made in the area of sexuality and teaching our children about sex in a lot of Christian literature, so be careful about Christian literature. But you don't have to be careful with the Book of Proverbs. It was written, it was provided by God himself to Solomon, who was the wisest man who ever lived outside of our Lord. So again, folks, the Book of Proverbs, it's the stuff to get your kids. And I would encourage you to get our Bible study guides available at kevinswanson.com. Available right now at kevinswanson.com. Where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world, right there at kevinswanson.com. We encourage you to get your friends and family members to tune in to us at kevinswanson.com as we deal with the very most important issues that are affecting our families today. As we talk about social trends and we talk about the solutions, real solutions, whereby we can root and ground our families in stronger social contexts, we bring a biblical worldview to bear in the social context of the present age. Now, granted, the public schools and the systems out there aren't putting together a very good social context, but we believe that if you get back to the principles of the Proverbs and the principles of the Word of God, you can form your families on the rock-solid basis of those principles, and we will have something different rather than the cultural suicide, the social suicide we're seeing today. And that's what we give you on this program. Folks, I would like to invite you back again next time now as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.